Welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs. Here are your hosts, Julie Fudge-Smith and Colleen Pilar.
Hi, welcome to Your Family Dog. I'm Colleen Pilar, and I'm here today with Julie Fudge-Smith, and we're talking about the importance of preparing dogs for life with baby. And so who better to have than Jennifer Schreyack, the founder of Family Paws Parent Education Program that specializes in helping families prepare their dogs for the arrival of a baby and providing additional support through the early infancy periods and all the way up through toddlerhood. It's really a very important program. Thanks so much for joining us, Jen.
Thank you for having me. Always a pleasure. Hello, Julie.
Hello, Jen. How are you?
Very good.
Good. I would say that I love your website. I frequently send clients to it and use a lot of your handouts on supervision. And I was going to recommend that we put that as a link in our show notes to not only your website, but to so many of your wonderful, wonderful handouts that talk about what is and is not appropriate supervision and what is and is not appropriate interaction for kids and dogs. They're really terrific. The graphics are great and they're very clear. But my question for you is, most people, when they call me, they say, it's kind of like we're in labor and heading to the hospital. And we'd like to know how we're going to introduce the baby to the dog. And my feeling is, I think it's a little bit late for preparing the dog. And I kind of think preparation needs to start sooner than that. What do you think?
I would agree that preparation is good sooner, but we can always do more than where we are. So I would say, awesome that you're calling me now. Absolutely, you know, there's so much that we can do. I'm really glad that you called at this time. So let's go ahead and get started with some simple things, and we can talk about those things. So I really do encourage people to never feel like it's too late. And I always also have tips on homecoming. Colleen and I have been talking about this, but I'm trying to get the whole idea of introducing kind of out of the picture, because when we think of introducing, right, we think of handshake and physical contact. It's not really what we're hoping to do. So it's a homecoming for the baby. We don't really need to do any official introduction. And so I want to change kind of the way we're thinking about all those things a little bit, but it's never too late. But you're absolutely right. We would love to hear from people earlier.
Yeah, never too early either.
Mm-mm. That's right. That's right.
The minute you have a dog is a really good time to start preparing your dog for any sort of, you know, interactions with children.
Yeah, because they're always learning. Mm-hmm. So,
well, and kids are, and dogs are going to interact with children, or they're going to be exposed to them well before you bring one home. Unless you live completely isolated from the rest of the world, your dog will likely encounter children. So I think that getting your dog used to having kids, And what kids sound like and what they do and how they move is probably a really great thing to do from the beginning, whether you have children or not. But if somebody is pregnant and they've had a dog that they've had for, you know, 5 years, you know, the wife brought it to the marriage, that kind of thing, what kind of things do you recommend to people if they were to call and say, look, we just found out we're pregnant and we want to make sure that our dog and our baby get along? What are some of the suggestions that you make, Jen?
One of the first suggestions that I make is actually creating and starting to practice your dog being able to have their own sanity time, their alone time, their ability to be able to be left behind a gate in a crate while the people are actually home. Mm-hmm. And this is because there are going to be stages where baby's crying, mom needs to tend to the baby, and the dog is going, oh, I don't know what to do, I don't know what to do, and starts thinking of creative things to do, like shredding paper or doing other things because mom's distracted. And sometimes it's just better to keep the dog in their own safety zone, where they're behind a gate, they know what to do, they can chill out, they can have a frozen food dispensing toy, something like that. And I have to tell you, that is the first thing I want people to practice, because if you find out when you need it that your dog can't be on the other side of a boundary, when you're not getting sleep at night, it can be one of the most frustrating things. And that's often when we see dogs getting medication or getting dumped off or at a shelter and that kind of thing. And we really want to avoid that. And it's really hard on the families if they haven't practiced it. So management is one of the number one things that I recommend.
And it's often a real surprise to them too, isn't it? Because they go to work all day and their dog is totally fine with that. And then they're home and their dog is not fine with the separation. And they just hadn't anticipated that that could be a challenge.
They don't. And they also might have just been home because they were on bed rest or they had a lot of free time home. So they spent a lot of extra attention with this dog. And now all of a sudden it's a game change and they're going, here's a gate. I want you behind it. And the dog's going, wait a minute, what about me? So it really is essential to make that a part of every dog's routine. So
absolutely,
that's my number one things. Yeah.
Well, some of the things I think we can do to enhance that is to create, it's not just like you're putting your dog into a barren room and putting up a gate and here you are in Guantanamo prison is what it feels like to the dog. No, we're talking about creating a safe place that's comfortable and happy for them as well. So it's like you may be behind a gate or you may be tethered, but you have, as you mentioned, like a Kong, a food dispensing toy. Maybe there is a DAP plug-in in the wall. There's a comfy bed. There might be through a dog's ear music playing, all kinds of things to make this a good spot for your dog to go. I actually had a bit of an experience with that myself in the last couple of weeks. I got a new dog, Zuzu, and who came, she's 16 months old. She came from my breeder who had 6 adult dogs and 9 puppies and no kids to a house with no other dogs and my 4 grandchildren living here, ages 7, 5, 3, and 4 months of age. So it was a huge game changer for Zuzu, who's a sensitive individual to begin with. So one of the things that I found was with my office has now become a safe haven for her. And one of the things I did do was stick a DAP diffuser in it because it's a small office. And I have found in the last few days that Zuzu will just take herself out of it and go into my office and lay down by the DAP diffuser. And so she knows there's a safe place that she can go, and there's always a chew there for her and a bed and that kind of thing. So your dog may well welcome that ability to take themselves out of the fray.
Yeah, they often do welcome it, as you say. They want to know what to do. And in many circumstances where it feels stressful or out of control or those moments when it's a little chaotic, I don't know. I never had those when I was kids, right?
Yeah, poor kids. I'm sure there was never any chaos.
Never. They really are kind of grateful for that. I have shepherds, and they constantly are like, well, what are you doing now? Oh, my gosh, you got up and walked across the room. What are you doing? So if I put them in one spot, then it was almost like they were thankful because they didn't have to patrol anymore.
That's right.
You know, they're like, I'm off duty now. I just stay here.
That's right.
Yeah, it really was good. But you're right. We want to make this what I reference as a success station and make it as positive as possible. And I find a lot of people feel like, oh, but I'm leaving him out. I feel really guilty. I feel really terrible. And he knows I'm leaving him out, and it's because of the baby. And if we, you know, all of that are normal, natural feelings, and we're going to feel that way. But we have to look at it and flip that around to say, you know what, maybe your dog would be more comfortable in the other room. And if we can help them to learn that this is a really positive, safe, comfortable experience for them with yummy treats and reinforcement, then we don't have to feel bad about it, right? It's a success station. They can only succeed there.
I love the name of that. I think calling it a success station helps to reframe it in everyone's mind to really look at this as this is a good spot. This is a nice thing.
Right. And I think that if you also phrase it in terms of, you know, a place for them to go and, you know, regroup, I mean, don't we all need that sometimes?
Yes.
And
yes.
Thank you, Colleen.
Absolutely.
Apparently, I need it more than most.
Visualizing a padded room, you know.
That's right, with lots of chocolate and, you know, Lifetime movies. Anyway,
yes.
So I think that we also need to help owners take the step back and realize that what we're providing for their dogs is the same kind of thing that they wish somebody would provide for them sometimes.
Yeah.
And that helps a lot. The other thing is we're not asking you to prepare this room and then stick the dog in there for 6 to 8 hours. What we're asking you to do is provide a space where the dog can have easy access to it when they need it, or that you can easily put them in for the time period that you need to. Maybe it's 5 minutes, maybe it's 15 minutes, maybe it's an hour. But if you vary the time where you're training the dog to do that, when I first got Zuzu and I have a gate across my office, I'd put her in there, close the gate, go to the bathroom, and come back. Right. So that she had, oh, it's okay. Mom just went to the bathroom. I can actually hear her down the hall. This is okay. So keeping her in there in short, very short little bursts of time, and then varying amounts of time so that she becomes comfortable with knowing that, oh, it doesn't really matter. Mom will be back. I've got this great stuff. So also, right, too, to have owners understand, we're going to help your dog learn to love this spot by giving them free access to it and limited times to begin with when we actually shut you in that room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Jen, you have a dog and baby hotline.
We do.
What kind of calls do you get on that?
I would say the most frequent calls we get are new parents who have a newborn and they're feeling really stressed out about the response their dog is giving to the newborn. Because as much as people want to prepare their dog, I always come back to, we're preparing parents. A lot of times we're actually conditioning them to respond to, you know, the behaviors of their dog versus your dog responding. So if your dog looks inquisitive and is excited over something going by or bicycle or joggers, well, we need to have an appropriate response to that. And the same thing is true when we bring the baby home and the baby's crying or we're tending to the baby. So our calls are usually because the dog is overly interested in the newborn, which is fairly expected. It's a very novel thing. And baby cries are meant to be alarms for us. And so we talk about it, but that is one of our most common. And unfortunately, the other most common call we get is usually there's been a bite. There's been a bite to a newly crawling baby or newly walking baby. So 8 months is classic. 14 months is the other classic time that we get calls.
And one of those problems is, it seems to me that so often parents think that they made it through and now the dog loves the baby just as much as they do. And as the baby starts to crawl and get into dog areas and dog things, the parents can be a bit taken by surprise.
And this is the main reason why I've really chosen to make this a niche. Instead of just lumping kids and dogs into one category, it's babies and toddlers, because babies, if you look at a newborn versus even a 6-month-old, completely different.
Absolutely. Completely
different. Yeah, and their behaviors are completely different. So our dogs don't have the app that lets them know there's going to be a change, and they don't have the reminders to let them know, here's what you can expect. So they're adjusting on the fly, and we often forget because we get so used to it. We often forget that our dogs, this is a new experience for them. And that day when you're celebrating, your baby is holding their head up steady and sitting up straight. Well, that's a whole different thing for your dog. You've just entered into a completely new world of novel stimuli for your dog. And some handle that and go, huh, that's nothing. And others go, whoa, huh, alien, yeah. What do I do? And we have to remember that it's ongoing education, and that's what I think most people just don't think about is, you know, 3 months and we're good. Nope. It's ongoing education throughout the life of kids and dogs.
Good point. Very good point. And the other thing that I have found to be interesting in having the range of grandkids here that I do is that I have to manage Zuzu in different ways with the different ages. With my oldest grandson, who's 7, Henry can participate more fully in games with Zuzu. I'm there to supervise, but he is much more able to throw things for her and know when to drop things. Whereas with the three-year-old, Zuzu's on a leash, and what we do is he'll throw the toy. Zuzu brings it back to me. I get it from Zuzu, hand it to him while I'm holding her leash. He throws it. I allow her to go on the leash to get it. So there has to be a much more supervised game with the three-year-old than with the seven-year-old. So it doesn't end with toddlers. It continues on after that, and there's always a level of supervision, which can get exhausting for parents.
Oh, it is exhausting.
Yes.
I often will say that if you don't feel exhausted, I'm worried, because it is not easy. And when people say, oh, it was a breeze, I often think that poor dog, because who knows what happened. And I joke and say our next program will be Hormones and Hounds, because if you think teenagers are any easier, you absolutely are wrong. Having a house full of them myself, and a seven-year-old, it's a whole different ballgame. So, but it's just, it's a beautiful thing to watch the relationship develop. And that's the thing. We have to allow time, just like we don't go out unless we're doing a reality TV show. We don't go out and marry someone at first sight, okay? Typically, we have a dating. We have a time to get to know you. We have a comfortable zone. We have all those things. Our dogs need that time with this new family member. And they really need time to develop a relationship. And I see kind of the comfy point being more around age 4 and 5, where that trust, that respect, if it's worked on, is kind of settled in a bit. And now you're able to do some of those really great things like you're talking about and include. But having the management that you have in between is setting the stage for the proper results long term. And that's what I think people need to understand, is that if you set up these situations and interactions, one thing, but if the dog is uncomfortable during those interactions, then we may actually not be creating friendship or trust. And that's a concern that will affect things in the long term. So we want it to be comfortable on both ends. So I love how you've set it up so both are successful, that the dog's not overwhelming to the three-year-old and the three-year-old's not overwhelming to the dog. And that is so important. So well done for you. I love that example.
Oh, well, thank you. That's not to say that I'm successful at this 100%. I mean, even as a trainer, one of the things I think is really important for parents to understand is that management is not 100%, and it can't be. You can get as close to it as possible, but there are times when, for example, the gate hasn't closed tightly on my office, and someone will come running by, and Zuzu will run at the gate, and it's like, oops, well, no one's been hurt, but nonetheless, the gate should have been closed. And so I do try really hard to manage. And oftentimes when the kids are all together, she's actually tethered to me. I have a leash that goes around my waist and tethers to her so that I can prevent her from joining in the game of chase and stuff like that. But it's hard for her, which brings me right back to those success stations. We were talking about it being exhausting. It's exhausting for her. It's exhausting for me. I don't think it's exhausting for the kids, but anyway, they're inexhaustible at that age. But that's another good reason for the success station. It's not just for the dog. It's for you, too, so that you can so that I can regroup, so that I can be more successful when the time comes that I have to manage Zuzu with the kids again. I need a break. She needs a break. And sometimes I just need to put her in my office with a couple of things because I'm getting too tired to manage.
And yeah, definitely. Because you'll definitely get tapped out. And
yes.
There are sometimes there's just, it's too many bodies.
Yes.
To juggle. So I definitely agree with that.
It's supposed to be, hopefully, encouraging to parents, not like, oh, what do you mean I have to supervise until the day I die? Yeah, you kind of do. On the other hand, it should also let you know, it should be encouraging that okay, we can get to points where we can manage effectively. And that's one reason why we want to get all these management things in place. So that when the time comes, even when they are teenagers and your dog needs a break from the teenagers, you still have that success station going. So these things should become habits, not just a temporary solution.
And it's not just about the dogs. I think it's also, too, I talk about creating dog-aware generations, because my goal is that if we can really model the appropriate behavior and comfortable, respectful interaction with the dog and model that for our young children and take advantage of that, you know, that eagerness to learn, the sponge that they are at such a young age, they never know differently. They know when a dog approaches me, maybe I turn my head to the right or I turn my head to the left, because you've modeled that. So mm-hmm. that creates dog-aware generations just by how parents are modeling safer, respectful, two-way communication with the dog, respecting what the dog is offering back. And I think that that's a big shift, too, and something that's very important. The other thing is, if we can keep the management, if we really focus on management most of the time, like if our dogs are successful and when they glance at us and we give them an out and we say, okay, I see you. Now you need praise or guidance. I'm going to help you out here. If we do that most of the time, we're preventing them from escalating in their stress.
Absolutely.
We're actually helping them so they don't have to escalate. And so when oops moments happen, as they always do with management, it's so rare. And we can distract, regroup, rebuild, and start over and forgive ourselves for that error and move on.
And one of the things you were saying before about how when the child is about 4 or 5 and we're talking about the same dog, same parent, same child, and that we're now at the child being 4 or 5, that you see it really being a sweet spot in the relationship. One big piece of that is that the dog has now had 4 or 5 years mm-hmm. of having the parent's support
yes.
in these interactions. And if the parent hasn't been actively supervising, supporting, and really understanding the dog's point of view in all of this, we're not going to hit that sweet spot. But once you've been doing it, it's just a matter of course, and you're teaching your child the empathy
yes.
pieces. And so there are fewer oops moments. Oops moments will always happen, but there are fewer. But the dog also knows that was an oops moment and has that good relationship, good reinforcement with both the parent and the child, but particularly the parent, that they know that you've got their back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think yeah. that's a huge piece. So Jen, why? Well, you sort of already said it, but like, you have a program that teaches trainers how to specifically help families with these small people. So why do you think it's so very important to give trainers specialized education? Because if they know about dogs, why isn't that enough? Why do they need to know more?
Because we really do need to focus on the entire dynamics. So what I might recommend, for basic manners and skills, it's one thing to have a protocol and have a way, and we can do this and we can do it many different ways. When you have human dynamics involved, there's a lot of evolving moving parts that need to be individually assessed and addressed. And there's no one size fits all. And these cases tend to take a lot of knowledge and on the spot learning and lots of flexibility. So they're not the easiest of consults and they're not the easiest of situations. And so many trainers don't necessarily have children, don't want children, that's fine. But if they have some more information, education about developmental stages and what is appropriately expected for that particular age and stage, then that's a benefit that you can bring into the consultation and experience. And that's, you know, so amazingly helpful because a lot of people don't have that knowledge.
Yeah. So you have licensed presenters all over the world,
mm-hmm.
right? So
yes.
How many people do you have involved?
About 200.
About 200. That's so cool. So if somebody was interested in learning more and finding a trainer who specialized pregnancy or infancy,
mm-hmm.
how should they reach you? How should they find out more? What tips would you give them?
I would have them go to familypaws.com. That's the best place to go. Familypaws.com. They can go there or search for us. We're also Family Paws Parent Ed on Facebook, and we do a lot of posts there as well. So those are the best resources.
So you can like enter in your zip code there and find someone near you, and
yes,
you can also get the phone number for the dog and baby hotline. Can you tell us that number?
That number is 877-247-3407.
So if somebody has a question right now that they're really, really burning question about their dog and their baby, they can just call that hotline and someone will get back to them?
That's exactly right.
Fantastic. So thanks so much for joining us today on
Thank you for
Family
having
Dog.
Me.
Julie, do you have any other questions for Jen?
No, the only thing I was going to say is I did want to mention the phone call or the phone number again, familypaws.com, Dogs and Stores, which is the trainer program, and the Success Station is a success station for everybody. And consider how important it is for your stress management, your kids' stress management, and that of your dog. So thank you so much, Jen. I think you do a great program. Like I said, I recommend your site a lot and have used your handouts with a wide variety of people to great success.
Thank you.
And I will tell you, the Success Stations, I use it even with people who don't have kids because it's a
great,
it is a great success station story. I use it with people whose dogs are highly nervous or anxious or have some other sort of anxiety or behavior problem, because it's really important that their dogs be supervised in exactly the same way. So it's successful for not only for kids and dogs, but just for dogs in general. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
All right, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Your Family Dog. Got questions? Interesting ideas? Colleen and Julie would love to hear them. Call 614-349-1661 or visit www.yourfamilydogpodcast.com to share your thoughts.
Hey, if you enjoyed the show, could you do us a quick favor? Head over to iTunes or Google Play or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review. That will help other families find quick and easy tips for enjoying life with their dogs. Thanks!